The art of true healing was encompassed in the spiritual practice and work of Christian mystic Joel Goldsmith. Here is part two of a talk he gave entitled The Spiritual Interpretation of the Holidays. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries.
We live free of theological domination. We're even free of the law. By obeying it, we stay more completely free, and we obey it more as spiritual students than would otherwise have been the case. We are free, even if it's only in a measure, of the fear of lack and of the experience of lack. Our entire work is attaining freedom. The whole mission of the Christ is to set us free. So therefore, we need no 4th of July. Every day has to be 4th of July, in which we rejoice in our freedom and in which we remember how it is attained and how we can bestow it on those who come to us. What is it we do as practitioners or teachers when patients or students or learners come to us? What do we do since we don't know anatomy and physiology and biology? We don't know medicine and we don't know surgery. What do except set them free from their physical worries? We set them free from economic worries. We set them free from theological worries. The greatest freedom that comes to a spiritual student is he knows he isn't going to go to hell. And he's the only one who knows it. All the rest of the world is looking forward with dread to that horrible experience of what it may be. But not the spiritual student. The spiritual student knows the only hell he can ever know is the one that he creates. And he can just as well have it here as hereafter. And he can just as well get free of it here as hereafter. Our entire work is bringing freedom to those who come to a message like this. And how then can we wait for 4th of July? Of course we don't. One thing we all learn in this work, I don't believe that there is any walk of life where there is more gratitude, more love, more sharing, more honoring than in this work. None. I'm sure that there is no other endeavor on earth, no other phase or facet of society where so much gratitude and so much love and so much joy is expressed as in spiritual work. And why? Because really, the only thing anyone ever has to be thankful for is freedom. And nothing else is worthwhile without freedom. And with freedom, everything else is added. And therefore, freedom is really the whole of a spiritual activity. So it is, while we are in this world, like the disciples were, let us celebrate these holidays. And let us encourage the rest of the world to do likewise. Only for us, let us not limit it to those days, but remember that there are 365 days in the year, and every one of them is equal to each other. And therefore, each one has to include the 4th of July and the 25th of December and the last Thursday in Thanksgiving and the President's birthdays and our parents' birthdays, too. That's a pretty good day to celebrate. Yes, I get thrills out of these holidays. I get thrills even in observing them as they are humanly observed, merely from the standpoint of remembering that even to those who ordinarily wouldn't be turning their thought to the higher message, this one day, in some degree, they all do. I'm all for holidays. I'm closing schools. I can close them all on holidays for me. Now, this is what's in my mind. Don't let me do you a disservice, which I could easily do if you do not make an effort to understand me correctly, or if you do not insist that I clarify the situation so that you understand it. I have said to you that the ancients were absolutely right in setting up a devil or Satan. They were absolutely right in understanding that there is an impersonal source of evil which tempts us, which comes to us as temptation and which never bothers us unless we succumb to the temptation. The mistake they made was setting up the devil as an opposite of God, an opponent of God, and thereby giving God an eternal warfare, an eternal attempt to get rid of the devil without ever being able to succeed. Had they understood that this devil or impersonal source of evil was not power, had no law, no life, no cause, they would have freed all of us. And then, verily, every day in the week would have been 4th of July. Now, in the same way, the earliest of our metaphysical teachers were absolutely right when they set up mortal mind and called it the sum total of all error, or the source of all error. But where they made their mistake, they set it up as an opposite of divine mind. And they gave us such statements as, mortal mind causes disease, but divine mind cures it. That's a nice battle, too, if divine mind wins. You see, anything that sets up an opposition to God cannot be truth. God is infinite, and God has nothing and nobody to war with. God is infinite. God is all. And there is no other power opposing God. Therefore, in proportion as you can treat this devil or mortal mind, not as something that you must have a deep understanding to overcome, not as something that you must go to God for, to have God's help, as you can understand it, not in the sense that you have to pray to get rid of it or overcome it, but when you can understand it as it actually is, a mental projection without substance, cause, or law, a mental projection without identity, individuality, being, substance, then you can follow this with exactly what the Hebrews did on one occasion. Rest in this word. Rest, relax from mental anxiety. Relax from mental labor, as if you had to overcome evil, or as if you had to contact God to do it for you, or as if you had to bribe God with a tithe. Oh, tithing's a wonderful thing, but for heaven's sakes, don't do it to please God. And don't do it in the idea that God is going to reward you for it, because it'll fool you and it won't happen. Tithing is a free gift to any impersonal or spiritual purpose. Tithing is a free gift of love with no strings on it. But the very moment you think of it in connection with God, you're thinking of it as a virtue. You're thinking of it as a way to help you to overcome this evil, or one of its forms, or more than one of its forms. Therefore, we in the infinite way having seen the nothingness of devil or Satan, having seen the nothingness of carnal mind or mortal mind, please do not let us invent some other term and then say, oh, help me get rid of my illusion. Don't do that. Don't set up another power against God and then want God to do something about it, or you'll just be back in theology or old-fashioned metaphysics. There is only one power, and if the infinite way is to perform a function in your life, it can only succeed if and in proportion as you can understand the nature of this carnal or mortal mind as a mental nothingness, an illusion, a mental projection, a temptation, a belief, a suggestion, and then drop it. Drop it. Harmony comes into your experience. Inner peace only can come into your experience in the realization of God as the only power, so that you can look out at the sins, diseases, deaths, lacks, and limitations that are frightening this world and realize that the only reason they're doing it is they're being accepted as power. The only reason they're perpetuating themselves is that they are being feared and fought. I bring you back over and over and over again to the Master's teaching of resist not evil, of put up thy sword. Over and over I come back to it so that you may study those passages and ask yourself, why did he say resist not evil? And you must come to the conclusion that if he could heal blindness with spittle, that evil isn't very much of a power. If he could make the lame walk merely by saying what did hinder you, then lameness can't be a law. In the infinite way, you break the spell, the mesmeric sense, which causes you to war or to seek a higher power with which to destroy a lesser power. You break that sense. That is the major point of the infinite way, that we are not another method of having God do something for us, another system of a greater power destroying a lesser power, that we in this work have come to the realization of one power and of the illusory nature of everything that is presenting itself to us as power. This doesn't mean that in probably a whole human span that we will demonstrate this to its fullest extent. Probably not. There's no history of anyone ever having accomplished it in full, not even the Master. But it is the ultimate of our spiritual existence. It is the ultimate of our existence when we have transcended the cross, the tomb, the body that bleeds because a knife has been thrust into it. When we have ascended above that to the realization of our spiritual identity and our spiritual body, then we will have the opportunity of witnessing this in its fullness. Paul reminds us not to claim that we have attained the realization of this, the demonstration of this in its fullness. Let us be awfully thankful for whatever measure we have already seen, witnessed, and benefited by. Let us be grateful. At least we know the principle. And if our particular airplane is only flying 100 miles an hour and for only 1 hour, let us at least be grateful that since we know the principle, we can keep on working with it until our plane flies around the world at 1,000 miles an hour. In other words, it makes no difference how small our demonstration is today. The tiniest demonstration is a proof of the principle. From then on, it is only the developing of our consciousness, the increasing of the depth and the scope until we perform the greater works. And then someday, at the point of ascension, the greatest works. The main thing is not the degree of your demonstration, the degree of your awareness of what the principle is that is to be demonstrated. And the principle that is to be demonstrated is that God in the midst of us is not only mighty, but the only mightiness there is. Not that God is a great power that is going to do tremendous things for us, but that God is the only power and nothing need be done for us. The realization of the greatest truth ever revealed, thou couldst have no power over me unless it came from God. What did hinder you? Pick up your bed and walk. As we abide in that principle, as we apply it to every facet and every phase of our human existence, we develop a greater consciousness of it and thereby a greater demonstration of it. Please, above all things, as you read these writings and over and over again come to such statements as nature of error, carnal mind, mortal mind, please don't be frightened by them as if they were something you had to overcome, but remember that they are terms for something you don't need to overcome. They are terms for that which is nothingness. And when you read them, have the same feeling about them that you would have about a soap bubble, a nothingness. Now, maybe it would be a good idea to change all those terms, carnal mind and mortal mind, into soap bubble. But anything that will make us lose our fear of the source of error will accomplish the purpose of the development of our spiritual consciousness, and nothing else will. There is no way to attain spiritual consciousness while having two powers, for spiritual consciousness is the consciousness of one power. And that power of a spiritual nature, not material and not mental. Whatever it is that trains us into an entirely new thought, a new state of consciousness, a new state of being, so that we can look upon all of the forms of evil, whether they're thrown at us under the guise of drug addiction, alcoholism, incurable diseases, and throw them back into the one word or one term, carnal mind, mortal mind, arm of flesh, fleshly mind, and thereby lose all fear of them. Then you find you have attained a greater awareness of spiritual consciousness, a greater attainment of the consciousness itself. As you know, most of you have been confronted in one way or another, some time or another, with some friend who has said, I have a headache. And you've done a little work about it, and the headache disappeared. If you ever ask yourself how it came about, the answer is you're not very much afraid of headaches. And therefore, it didn't concern you too much. You weren't afraid they were going to die. You weren't afraid they were going to go insane. You weren't afraid that they'd go unconscious. It was just a headache. And therefore, with no fear of it, you turned within, you realized a few truths, and that was the end of it, and probably was the end of the headache. Yes. That must be our attitude in the final analysis. When we are confronted with any and every phase of discord, including the last enemy, and are able to say, as Jesus did, he's not dead, he's just asleep. Let's wake him up. Oh, I realize I'm talking now very absolutely and not asking to be pushed into that position too quickly. But nevertheless, as we grow, so we are asked for help on this, that, or the other thing, and gradually approach each and every problem without fear. Without fear, in the same way that we approach the simple headache. Oh, it's just a headache. Well, let's do something. And then we'll have our little realization, and it's done. Once we realize that the name or nature of the discord, physical, mental, moral, financial, is of that same nature as the simple headache, so that we do not fear it, then we do the same thing. We go within, have our brief meditation, receive our click, and we drop it. But remember this, that to do that and then be sitting by waiting for the telephone to ring every minute how the patient's getting along is to prove that you have not attained the principle. To fear to give a treatment to your child because it's your child means you haven't attained the realization of the principle. Once you understand this principle, it makes no difference whether it's your child or somebody else's, or your parent or somebody else's, because you're not dealing with persons, you're dealing with a state of nothingness which you have realized to be a state of nothingness. That's what you're dealing with, not the person, not the patient. They don't enter it. They're merely the beneficiary of your understanding, if you have understanding. They're going to be the victim of your lack of understanding if you don't have the understanding. But it isn't the patient that you think about, nor is it the disease, nor the unemployment, nor the poverty, nor any other phase of the error in their life. What you are thinking of is the principle of your work. And the principle is God, and an infinite God. And the principle is that we are being tempted by a million different pictures, all of which emanate from the same old devil or mortal mind, or arm of flesh or fleshly mind, and all of which represents the arm of flesh or nothingness. In proportion as you can face the claims that way, you can meet them. In proportion as you can understand this principle for yourself, even if you can't do your own work, and that probably is the most difficult of all, at least you make it easy for the practitioner to help you, as long as you aren't sitting around fearing that which you've already understood to be nothing more nor less than a mental imposition. Now, all of these mental impositions come through the human mind. And therefore, it is necessary to understand that this so-called mind of man, this mind that knows good and evil, is not a power. Not a power in the sense of creating evil or being evil. Try to understand the true nature of your mind, and you'll be at peace forever. God gave us our mind as an instrument of awareness. with our mind, we become aware of that which is. We go to school and learn that 2 times 2 are 4. We don't make it so with our mind. We merely learn through the mind that it is so. The mind is an instrument like the body is. In our present state of existence, I walk to the door, and therefore I use my body, and especially my feet and my limbs. If I give or receive, I use my hands. These are my instruments. But if I want to learn something, I use my mind. But I don't use my mind to create anything. Do you understand that? I don't make of my mind a creative power. I make of it a state of awareness. With my mind, I'm aware of your presence, but I can't, with my mind, make you present. That is one of the errors of metaphysics, that people believe that by mentalizing, they can create patients and students and followers. That's a lot of nonsense. If you do it, you'll lose them, sure, in faith, because somebody else will probably do it with deeper concentration than you and take them away from you. You do not mentalize to get anything, supply, transportation, health. Your mind wasn't given to you for that purpose. It was given to you as an instrument of awareness through which you learn. You become aware of all that is, whether it is of art or literature or music or your business or your profession. Whatever it is, your mind is the instrument through which you learn it. You don't create those things. You learn them. You don't create with the mind. But too many have been taught that thoughts are things, and therefore all you have to do is think a thought and get a thing. Don't do it. It's a dangerous practice. It can be done on some small scale, but it's dangerous. I have known people who have used their minds to work themselves into certain positions, certain places in life, and I've also seen the sorrow that comes to them, because someday or other they lose. Someday or other a change comes. Someday or other somebody smarter or stronger comes into the picture, and then they found that the house they've built crumbles. Now, we don't create anyone's health with our mind, but we can sit down in a listening attitude and become aware of the health that is omnipresent. If we sit down in a listening attitude, receptive, peacefully, quietly, in the realization of God as the only power.
Joel Goldsmith, Christian mystic who passed in 1964. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.